conversation from there. Well, thank you. I'm delighted to be here. This is, this is the mic that's live. Today, I'm going to talk about my most recent research on teens and young adults and how they use electronic kind of communicative technologies. So that means we'll cover everything today from the internet to cell phones to Twitter to social networks and hopefully a few things in between. And I'm going to go kind of fast because there's a lot of data out there to talk about and I want to present it to you as much as I can, but okay. Okay, I guess there's some difficulties with the mics. I guess that's the recording mic and this is the speaking mic. So I'll speak into the speaking mic and hopefully the recording mic will pick it up. Great. Is that okay? Can everybody hear? Yeah? Great. So just for those who don't know, as Rachel said, we're a nonprofit, nonpartisan research center, and we do data analysis that we hope is of academic rigor, even though we're not an academic research center. And so just quickly, the bulk of the data I'll be presenting today comes from two random digital telephone surveys done in September of 2009, one with 800 parent-child pairs. The teens were 12 to 17. And that involves a cell phone sample, which is the first time we'd done that, and boy, was that interesting. And then another study of about 2,200 adults, 18 and older. That's also a random digital telephone survey. Both of them are nationally representative, and the adult sample is with Spanish language interviewing and cell phone sample. We also did some focus groups in the fall, and some of that data will be presented here today as well. So I'm going to jump right in. So who's online? Good question, important question for those who are trying to reach people using digital technologies. 93% of teens are online. Young adults are online at an equal level. And today in my talk, I'll often sort of interchangeably refer to 18 to 29-year-olds as millennials, partly because my organization did a big research study that focused exclusively on them, and that was the name we gave them. But as you can see, internet connectivity steadily declines as people get older until we reach about 38% who are connected to the internet at age 65 and older. And you can see this is a lovely chart, which I'll just flash by quickly. Teens have really been the early adopters of technology. Young adults have met them and older adults, and everybody's kind of rising steadily together. But we have to ask ourselves, we can't just look at internet access. What do we mean when we say internet access? And what we really want in a day and age of video and photos and high bandwidth pieces of information that we're trying to transmit is we really want broadband. And so the top four bars show our broadband penetration. It's about 76% of families with teens 12 to 17 have broadband at home. That's up from about 71% about 18 months ago. So it's still increasing. Overall, about 60% of Americans have broadband at home. But it's really important to remember the bottom three bars. People with dial-up have a very different relationship to the internet than people who have broadband. That's about 10% of families and a slightly larger percentage of all adults. And then the 12% at the bottom, people who either have a computer that's not connected to the internet or don't have a computer at all. And these are folks who really don't have access to information that you provide to them online. One caveat to that, of course, is the cell phone. We are finding now in our research that people are using cell phones to go online, which I'll talk about a bit more in a second. And then many of them do not classify themselves as internet users, even though they are going online on a cell phone to gather information. So cell phones, another way people go online. And so when we look at teens, about 75% of them have cell phones. That's been steadily increasing, again, over the past 5 years. When we look at older adults and young adults in combination, young adults are the most likely to have a cell phone. 93% of them have one. 83% of all adults older than, all adults as a bulk have a cell phone. So it's actually a reasonably ubiquitous piece of computing technology now in the pockets of a pretty significant majority of Americans. When you look at drill down into teenagers again, back to teens, you see that the people who don't have cell phones are the 12-year-olds. And over the past 5 years, we've watched this sort of age of cell phone ownership kind of slowly kind of age downward. And so I would expect in another few years that we'll be seeing similar numbers among 10-year-olds, 11-year-olds that we see among 12-year-olds. Interestingly, the only other demographic difference in ownership of cell phones is by family income. Not entirely surprising. Lower income teens are less likely, or teens who come from lower income households are less likely to have a cell phone, but not that much less likely if you look at the numbers overall. Otherwise, there are no demographic differences. So by area, by race or ethnicity, by family education, there are no other differences in cell phone ownership, which is very different from computers, which are still very much tied to socioeconomic status and where there are still some racial and ethnic disparities in ownership. Another thing that's really important to remember when we're talking about cell phones is that, and this is adult data, we don't have this data for teens because they're minors, is that a large percentage of millennials have only a cell phone and not a landline. So if you're a survey researcher and you're trying to reach people on a landline, you're missing a lot of people under the age of 30. A lot of them, 41% of them, in fact. And so that's something that you really need to take into account when thinking about how you want to reach out to these various populations. We could not talk about cell phones without talking about texting. It's hugely important. As anybody who works with young adult populations or teen populations knows, it is a vital mode of communication for these age groups. 66% of all teens are using text messaging. Again, 59% of all adults are texting, so the disparities between the groups are not that large. When you look at 8 to 29-year-olds, 88% of them say that they have texted. And in fact, 80% of them have texted in the past 24 hours. On average, the median number of texts sent a day is in the past 24 hours is 10. For young adults, it's 20. And for teens, it is orders of magnitude higher. And that data is as yet unreleased. We'll be releasing it in the next couple of weeks. But I can assure you that anybody who works with teens will not be shocked, but the rest of the world will be. Another thing we have to talk about when we're talking about ways that people go online is game consoles. Not something that you ordinarily think about, but for many young adults in particular, there's a lot of ownership of game consoles, a lot of use of them, and they are now connected to the internet. It is a way that people reach out. They actually send email through these game consoles, and particularly portable gaming devices often serve a cell phone-like function or almost like an iTouch-like function in people's lives. It's a PDA, and it's also a gaming device. And we'll see here in a second that there are certainly percentages of people who also use them to go online. Gaming is another arena I just wanted to touch on very briefly in that it's a huge opportunity for reaching people. I know there is a whole sort of serious games coalition of people who are working together to try to create games that have an educational component. And the reason why they're doing that is because 97% of adolescents play games of some kind, 53% of all adults do, young adults it's higher. So there's a lot of promise there in terms of enthusiasm for games as a way of reaching people and as a way of teaching people about things. Another place that I know there's been some interest is in virtual worlds. I know the CDC had a partnership with Wyville in which they created a flu that went very well and was very interesting to the teens and the tweens who were playing in Wyville. But about 8% of teens are using virtual worlds. That's actually heavily weighted towards younger teens. It's not something that has a great level of adoption at this point. Same thing with older adults, where only about 4% use them. So something that's very interesting, a kind of a play-like space, but where we're still really at the beginning of adoption for that technology. So let's get back to how people go online again, and the different ways in which people go online. So with adolescents, we see clearly the desktop is a primary way of going online, but cell phones, 27% of teens say they go online with their cell phone. 24% go online on a game console, 19% on a portable gaming device. And the thing to remember a little bit about cell phones is that for most teens, app devices, so like the Droid, like the iPhone, are aspirational. Teens would like to have them, they are very expensive, and they have an ongoing significant expense. And so in the focus group work that we did, most teens said, oh yeah, I'd really like to have one, but I don't have one yet. We encountered very few teens who actually owned one. What was more prevalent was an iTouch, which is a Wi-Fi enabled iPhone-like device that doesn't have the phone component, though you can download Skype to use it as a phone. And many more teens had those because they don't have a recurring cost. And in many cases, teens had those in conjunction with a cell phone. So if you're thinking about apps and using apps as a way of reaching people, know that we're still pretty early on, particularly for adolescents when it comes to that kind of technology. This is just adult data. We asked the question slightly differently, but the big takeaway from this chart is that millennials are enormously likely to be computing wirelessly wherever they are. 62% of them say that they are using a laptop or handheld when they are away from home. And when you actually drill down, we see that it is actually cell phones are a dominant way. So laptops are part of it, but cell phones are also an enormous part of how young adults are computing when they're moving around. A really, really important finding, though, here is that African Americans are much more likely to use a cell phone to go online than any other group, significantly more likely. More than half of African Americans we talked to said that they use a cell phone to go online, even more so when you look at populations under the age of 30. And so that's a really important way for the African American community to go online, particularly since they are less likely to have access to computers and necessarily to go online in other ways. So if that's a population that you're interested in reaching, the cell phone is really, I think, a key way of reaching out. So we can't talk about adolescents and young adults without talking about social networking sites. Up is two examples, including my Facebook profile, which, yes, I'm sharing with you, and not my MySpace profile. Certainly, I think I'm assuming most everybody in the room is familiar with these social networking sites. It is obviously hugely important for teens. As you can see from this slide, it's about 82% of older teens who are using it. The younger teens are a little bit more cognizant of the fact that the social networks would rather not have them there, even though it is relatively easy for them to go online anyway. And as you can see here from this slide, if you're over 30, basically it's not a great way to reach you. It's fine. There's about 40% who use it. That's heavily weighted towards, 30 to 50 as opposed to anyone who is older than that. But for young adults, it is a hugely important part of the way their social lives are organized. Another thing to say is recently we've seen a move towards multiple profiles, which is actually good for folks trying to reach people because it means that they're actually active in different places. Often the legacy profile is less used, it's just not taken down. But nevertheless, teens and young adults are talking about how they have multiple profiles. In fact, more than half have a profile in more than one place. And where do they have those profiles? Facebook is dominant, and in fact, it is dominant across all age groups. What's interesting is that young adults are more likely to have a MySpace page than any other age group. Part of that is because they were online earlier, they started at MySpace and they have migrated to Facebook, whereas older adults came on and just started on Facebook and never went to MySpace. Older adults tend to be more likely to use something like LinkedIn or more professional sites, not surprising again given the age differentials. So there are some interesting differences also in socioeconomic status and race and ethnicity in use of various websites. Non-white, so Hispanic and African American young adults are much more likely to have a MySpace page than a Facebook page, though they still have Facebook pages. And same thing with low-income youth are more likely to have a MySpace page. One thing to remember when talking about social networks and actually talking about technology in general is that it is not a static thing that we are looking at. These are moving targets and they're changing all the time. And so we've been looking at this for about 5 years now and we're finding that social networks, activities within the networks are changing over time. That in fact, we are seeing decline in certain types of activities in social networks. We're seeing flattening in certain other types of activities in social networks. We're not sure whether this is an indication of less enthusiasm for social networks. That's possible. What we do know is that we do think that it is actually showing, again, this movement from different social network sites. So from what MySpace to Facebook, MySpace has different affordances, different things you can do on the site. Facebook has something else entirely that it offers to you. So MySpace has a blog, Facebook doesn't. So we're actually seeing a huge decline in blogging numbers, and we think that has a lot to do with it. But the sites themselves also change over time. For anybody who's a Facebook user, you know that Facebook keeps changing the user interface over and over again over time. And so, and that's something, again, to remember as you think about what you're crafting to use to get your message out, but also the ways in which you want to test that message and its effectiveness. Because it may be that the thing that you started out with is not the thing that you're actually measuring now, 6 months or a year in the future. So, again, remembering that the technology is constantly in flux is really quite important. So how many people in the room know what Twitter is? Okay, good, good. A pretty good subset. So this is my Twitter page, yes, and or a snapshot of it. And so Twitter is an online an online application that allows people to post short messages of 140 characters and send them out to a group of followers, people who follow them and who wish to receive their messages. And so you create a list of people that you follow, and you then receive their messages in that center section. And then in the top box is where you put in your message of the day or the hour or the minute, depending on how frequently you tweet, and send that out to your followers. So what's interesting about Twitter is that Twitter is, so this is one way that Twitter looks, but here's another way that Twitter looks. Same thing, same information taken 5 or 10 minutes later, but it is, but it is totally different looking. And because Twitter is an open application, it means that there are hundreds of different ways, different applications you can use to express Twitter on your desktop, in your handheld, on your cell phone, anywhere, basically, that you can access internet connectivity. So so that makes Twitter very versatile, and but also makes it a little bit more complicated to study. Another thing to know about Twitter is that just because the media loves it doesn't mean that people do. 8% of teens use Twitter. Not a whole heck of a lot of them. It is more predominantly older girls, 14 to 17, who use it. The other thing to know about Twitter is that a lot of young adult users are using it only in a kind of an absorptive way. They don't actually broadcast tweets themselves. They follow people they're interested in, celebrities in particular, and just keep in touch with them as a way of getting a sense of what these people's lives are like. But they themselves don't contribute to the noise. Older adults are actually a little bit more enthusiastic about Twitter than teens are. This question actually combined together Twitter and status updating. Since then, we have separated this question, and we found that it's about 14% of 18 to 29-year-olds who say they use Twitter, and about 10% of adults overall say they use it. So again, about 1 in 10 people are using Twitter. It's cool. It's a new app. It's really interesting. There's a lot of interesting stuff going online, on Twitter, particularly, I think, in the ways in which we're observing how African-American young adults are using Twitter in very, very public ways, using a function called a hashtag, which is a way of kind of marking text so that other people can use similar text, and that text can be searched upon, and you can engage in some ways in kind of a collective conversation around that text. And African-Americans who are young adults or who appear to be young adults are utilizing this kind of tool to have kinds of online conversations in Twitter in ways that are very interesting and very different than the ways we see other users using it. So definitely more to study there and something to keep an eye on. Video. Well, we have Kaisi Drew here, who's going to talk to us in a second about her use of YouTube to talk about and to do sexual health education. And so I wanted to be sure we had some context numbers for that. Video watching and sharing is hugely popular amongst young adults and adults online. 52% of adults watch videos online. 72% of young adults do. Teens are equally as enthusiastic about videos. And they're also sharing videos of themselves online as well. 20% of 18 to 29-year-olds have posted a video of themselves online, and 7% of all adults in that age group have. Other information, the other things that teens are doing online, they're actually searching online for health information. The top section is about searching online for general health information, and you can see about 31% of all teens are doing that. It's clearly tilted towards older girls, as is searching online for sensitive health information. And in that case, we define that as looking online for information about depression, sexual health, and drugs. Another thing to note about this, which isn't obvious from this chart, is that low-income youth consistently over time are much more likely to be using the internet to search for health information than any other sort of income cohort. Now we come to sexting, which is one way in which young adults are using technology to seek sexual partners or to connect with potential sexual partners or to connect with people who they wish to be involved with in a romantic way. About 4% of teens with cell phones say that they have, and our definition of sexting is to text a sexually suggestive nude or nearly nude image of yourself to someone else. About 4% of teens with cell phones say they've ever done that, so not a particularly large number of teens. About 15% say that they have received one of these images of somebody that they know, so not just pornography that's floating around, but an image that's recognizable of somebody who they're acquainted with. And so how does it break down? there's no difference by gender. Boys and girls are equally likely to send these images. The older teens are more likely to have sent them, which isn't particularly surprising since they're more likely to be engaged in the kinds of relationships in which these get sent. Interestingly, 17% of teens who pay for their own phone and who in other ways are more emancipated from their parents are more likely to be sending these kinds of images. For receipt, again, there are no gender differences, and we see the same kind of age differential that we saw before. It gets bigger as you get older. And merely sending text messages or having an unlimited texting plan, which is about 70% of teens, means you're more likely to receive these. So there isn't a lot that really alters whether or not you're likely to receive these kinds of images. And when we did our focus groups, we tried to focus in on what were the different scenarios under which sexting occurred. And what we heard from our teens in these groups was that there were really three scenarios that played out. That these images were sent between two romantic partners as a part of, instead of, in lieu of, as prelude to, as a part of sexual activity. And those images never left the couple. It was something that was about trust between the two people who were engaged in the relationship, and they didn't share them. The second scenario is similar, again, sent as a part of sexual activity, but it jumped ship. It left the relationship. One or both parties shared the images with somebody else, and then ad nauseum beyond that. And then the third situation was where there wasn't actually a pre-existing relationship between the two people involved, at least initially. One person would like to be in a relationship and was sending these images as a way of showing intent, interest, availability, and it was using it as kind of a currency. Look, I'll show you mine if you'll show me yours. And now this has really moved into the digital realm, and that's a lot of what sexting is. And of course, this third set of images are also the ones that tend to get circulated more widely. So, in closing, what do you need to know? There is a lot of data I just threw at you. Some of you are going to want to cherry pick and pick and choose. There were even data points, particularly about income, low-income youth and minorities that I wasn't able to include here today. But you need to know that it's really important to know who uses a technology before you decide to use a technology to get the message out. I'm sure many of you already know this, but knowing whether your particular specific part of the population you're trying to reach uses a technology is really important. Also, ask them how they use the technology. A lot of young adults in particular don't want stuff pushed to their cell phone. It's a really personal device. They want to be able to reach out with it. They don't want you to bombard them with information on it. And also, technology is constantly changing, as well as people's access to it, like we see with social networks and the ways in which they change. Blogging is really on the decline. And people's choice to access technology is also changing. I mean, we've watched Twitter rise and to become something that was, you know, much more significant than it was even a year ago. But whether it will continue to rise, we don't know. So really staying on top of things and remembering to cast a wary eye on what the media tells you is the next big thing. Are all really important takeaways, and I hope they prove useful. And obviously, I'll be happy to take questions at the end. Thanks very much.